Welcome back to the program, Outdoor Journal, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm Angelo Viola, and that was a what they call a pregnant pause.
Oh. I will take full ownership of that one. I thought we were going to make it through this one. Perfect.
I did, too. I was so proud of you, Michael.
Such a role.
Not that I'm not, by the way. I don't want to say I'm not, but I didn't want to jinx you. And then there it came. Welcome back to the program, Outdoor Journal, Sports 959, The Fan, Angelo Viola. He is Michael Mooring, right over there, and Derek Brandeo, and Nikki V next to me. And this next segment is pretty special for me personally because I first saw this name or heard about this when I was 11 or 12 years old. And it was while I was out scouring. I was a river rat. I was out scouring the creeks that dump into this part of southern Ontario into the Great Lakes, the Wilmot Creek being one of them. Today's segment is about Samuel Wilmot. And his farm was on the Wilmot Creek, and he was a noted spawning at that time, as it is today, it was a noted spawning stream. For Lake Ontario salmon. However, by the 1850s, the runs of salmon in the creek and in other small streams on Lake Ontario, in fact, all of them, they'd been greatly depleted as a result of overfishing and the obvious changes in the environment with urbanization taking control of the northern shore of Lake Ontario. Anyways, by the mid-1860s, Samuel Wilmot, established a hatchery in Newcastle, Ontario, intending to save the Lake Ontario salmon. And that is the Atlantic salmon that was native and prevalent to Lake Ontario back then. And when that effort failed, he turned to hatching other native species and introducing exotic fish, like, for example, the Pacific salmon in eastern Canada. That was the Chinook and the Coho. Wilmot established 15 federal fish hatcheries across Canada and was a key participant in an international network of fish culturalists in the 19th century. Well, there's a 900-page book authored by Samuel Wilmot that is now being interpreted by folks to kind of figure out exactly what it means. And it's taking place in our nation's capital, in Ottawa. Joining us now is one of the people that's working on that. His name is Dr. William Knight. He is the curator at Agriculture, Food and Fisheries Ingenium, Canada Agriculture and Food Museum in Ottawa. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning, Angelo. Great to talk to you. I'm a river rat too.
Are you? That's great. But it's true. You know, I saw that there was a placard. I think it was outside of the town of Newcastle, just north of Taunton Road. And it was a placard and had the name Wilmot on. That's where I first saw it when I was a kid. I had no idea what it meant and what it was for. But, of course, since then, I've since looked into it. And what an amazing individual. And what a contributor to the conservation efforts that we have in this part of the world. Just fantastic. Tell us about your work with regards to the Wilmot name.
So, yeah, so as a kid growing up, I chased smallmouth bass in Ottawa, lived in Toronto many years, and then started discovering, you know, the brook trout streams and the headwaters there. And that's how I came across Wilmot Creek too. But many years later, when I decided to study the history of fisheries in Ontario, I really focused on Wilmot. So I did my master's degree at Trent University and wrote a small book on sport fisheries in Ontario, and Wilmot was a key figure in that history, of course, for all the reasons that you've already named. Attempting to restore Lake Ontario salmon in the 1860s. He started that in about 1866 and then became a federal fisheries officer, the first federal fish culturalist in Canada. Other people had experimented with fish culture before Wilmot, but he was the one who really systematized it and, you know, took it in and became really the central element of a fisheries management in Canada, you know, apart from regulation, but in terms of like activity, creating hatcheries, getting fish into the waters, it was really Wilmot. And he was quite a powerful figure in the federal fisheries department between 1868 and 1895 when he retired. So I was really focused on Wilmot early in my academic career, and then I did my PhD in Carleton University in Ottawa, and just continued my my research into Wilmot. And he established a museum in Ottawa, Fisheries Museum, and I basically wrote a biography of that institution. So really dove deeply into Wilmot's role, and then since then, and about I finished that in 2014, I became curator at Ingenium, and my specialty is agriculture and fisheries. And I connected with Brendan Edwards, who's head of the Department of Archives and Library at the Royal Ontario Museum. And they have this letter book, this 945-page book that you referred to. And it is a, and I did some research into that book and discovered how hard it is to read the letters. They're all copies. They're all written on onion skin paper. And just imagine, you know, the person whose handwriting you have the most difficulty reading, Wilmot is like a level above that. And it's all like fountain pen on onion skin paper bleeding through. And so they're really, really difficult pages to transcribe. And so I encountered that. But so what happened was that Brendan and I had been discussing, you know, making those that book particularly accessible. And so the Royal Ontario Museum and the University of Toronto digitized that entire book. And that's available on the internetarchive.org if you search there for the Wilmot letter book. And then last year, he launched a program, project to have people volunteer to transcribe each page of that book. So that's what's happening right now. We've got a team of about 34 collaborators, volunteers, and they are reading each page and doing their best to transcribe the contents of each letter as accurately as possible. And that's what this book is. It's a collection of letters, and it's only between 1886 and 1889. And so there's 945 pages of letters, and they're all, some of them are very short, you know, accounts of expenditures at the different hatcheries. And some of them get more into things that probably interest people like you, like exchange of fish species, introducing carp, for example, which Wilmot was really the first person to introduce to in Ontario in the 1880s, and Pacific salmon. He was the first to introduce Chinook salmon into Lake Ontario. That didn't work out, but he was. We can kind of trace that project. You know, we all know Chinook fishing and coho in the Great Lakes, and you know, it really started back in the 1870s after Wilmot realized that he wasn't going to bring back the Atlantic salmon.
So he realized that back that early and made a turn to the right or left, whatever way you want to look at.
How do you even, like, you know, realize that? Like, what tools or technology do you have to be able to track that?
Back then, how do you
keep track of that?
Well, the fish, you know, the whole kind of hatchery system that we know of today was really kind of a European invention. So the French and the Germans really kind of perfected that technique of, you know, raising fish in under controlled conditions, stripping trout and salmon of eggs, mixing, you know, the milt and the roe, and then kind of raising the fish under controlled conditions. And that became really popular in North America in the 1850s when Americans started, you know, kind of catching on. And Wilmot kind of followed in that that trend. And so he focused on the Atlantic salmon. He saw initially, like, good returns of fish. He was quite excited that this was going to actually restore the salmon to Lake Ontario. And he was really interested in the fish, not recreationally, but as a commercial and subsistence species. So it wasn't, and that's something that's always interested me, is was there sport fishing of Atlantic salmon in Ontario? And from what I can tell, there wasn't like a recreational fishery per se, on the same scale, for example, as the Eastern Canadian fishery, you know, on the famed, you know, Atlantic salmon fisheries on the Restigouche and the,
right.
all the Gaspé Z rivers, you know, that drew tourists from around the world to fish those rivers. And if you think of the physical differences between those rivers, which are kind of like lots of pools, lots of kind of broad stretches, easy to fly fish. Imagine, you know, like Wilmot Creek is not an easy creek to fish, you know, using a fly rod. Like you're dunking spawn or whatever.
Yeah.
So he just kind of realized after about 10 years of sort of initial strong returns to the rivers that this wasn't working. And that's when he actually started to think about introducing Pacific salmon. So that kind of, by 1880, he realized there's no point. And the other thing, too, was that he was waiting for salmon to come back to his hatchery so he could strip eggs and collect all that. And so after a while, he realized, you know, well, this practically cannot work because the fish aren't returning.
Smart man back in the 1800s realized when to cut bait and get on with life, right? And he started working on Pacific salmon, which from what I understand, there were some good results, some positive results, but not enough to make it viable back then. Of course, we know from history that it did eventually take and work, and we've mm-hmm. been doing that for a number of years, but... I think he was close. What would have happened had he been successful, I wonder, back in the late 1800s in cultivating that Pacific salmon fishery in Lake Ontario? I wonder where we'd be today with it.
Well, yeah, that's a good question. But I think the same conditions that prevented the return of the Atlantic, you know, really mitigated against Pacific salmon from taking hold. And that's, you know, the streams were degraded. You know, forest cover was gone. Mill dams were all over the place. You know, so the very things that prevented Atlantic salmon from, you know, kind of reproducing really affected the Chinook. Though he did record, I think, the very first returning Pacific salmon to Wilmot Creek. So, you know, he was like very cool. Super excited. Yeah. He also tried introducing them into Lake Huron as well. So he kind of spread his bets. He tried Lake Huron. He introduced Pacific salmon into Quebec, into New Brunswick. I mean, these all failed, of course, but, you know, he was really determined to try and get that species connected. The one Pacific salmon he did succeed with, though, was the rainbow trout, right? Which was, you right. know, is a Pacific salmon. But the Americans were experimenting with rainbow trout in Huron and Superior, and that really was. And he did a bit of work with rainbow trout, but that was mainly American fish kind of, you know, naturalizing through the Great Lakes. So that introduction worked. And
the other one that worked that we just sort of skipped over earlier on is carp.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest about it. That one was a huge success.
It was, yeah. And that's a good indicator, too, of the changed environmental conditions, right? From kind of like cold water environments to warmer water environments, though, you know, there's a mix of those all across the Great Lakes. You know, you go to Coots Paradise, that's a warm water fishery. He was the one who got carp up from the United States, and that is in this letter book. There's correspondence, you know, detailing that transfer of fish from the Smithsonian Institution to Canada. So
what year was that, you know?
That was in the early 1800s, or early 1880s. I think he began his correspondence in about 1882, 83, but by 86 he was, you know, he was getting fish. And he also regretted it later. Like there's some commentary in some of the annual reports where he says, you know, I wish I hadn't done this because, you know, carp in the 19th century came from Europe. They were really kind of considered not a miracle fish, but as a fish that would, you know, easily adapt to any sort of water and provide, you know, a commercial fishery and a food fishery for people. And then, you know, of course, it was, they were very successful. And, you know, initially, you know, our attitude to carp has really changed, but, in, especially in regards of a recreational fishery. But, you know, in the day, you know, I think he regretted that introduction.
Where can folks get more information on this? This is fascinating. I could talk to you all day on this. You know, I'm sure there's a million questions that people are asking. Where can they get more info on it?
So I would say the best place to start, it would be to if you want to actually volunteer and work on this letter book, you can go to fromthepage.com. And I'm just going to bring it back up on my computer to give you the right web address. That would be a good start. And that's fromthepage.com. And you can search, Samuel Wilmot on that. You'd come across the letter book, and then you can register. You can start transcribing. You can also, I'm not sure if you've got, a page where I could post some links, but I've got some articles and chapters where, that are freely accessible online. If you searched my name, William Knight, and Samuel Wilmot, you'll come across free articles for download about Wilmot and his career. Perfect. So there's several that, you know, you can easily find.
Michael, make a note of that. We can put that right up on our site, and folks can check it out, because I think it's fascinating. And you're right. The more people that are helping you in transcribing this thing, the quicker we'll have some answers. You never know. Yeah. There might be some nuggets of gold sitting there that we can all use as anglers.
There is for sure.
I just wanted to say we're running out of time here, but I wanted, before we run out, I want to thank you for doing such a great job on this. And don't give up, man. I know that's good. It's going to be a daunting task for sure, but don't give up. Like I said, there's probably gold in there for us.
Well, we're already 20% through the letter book. We're making amazing progress. I thought this was going to take years, but I think you know, we're well on track to get things done. I just wanted to acknowledge Brendan Edwards at the ROM too. He's been a fantastic resource. He started this transcription project, so kudos fantastic. To him as well.
Dr. Knight, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Angelo. Talk to you later.
Dr. William Knight, curator at Ingenium, Canada Agriculture and Food Museum in Ottawa, and he's in particular agriculture, food, and fisheries. Fascinating.
Very.
That the carp was actually introduced by Wilmot.
And it was considered a miracle fish.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Eh? You see what I'm saying?
I know.
Every week here on Outdoor Journal, something.
We learn something new every week.
Let's see what else we can learn about after this next break. More journal after this. Don't you dare go away.